Of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the April 2025 issue of Southern Living Magazine. This week, we will hear from the front section, Life at SL, that starts every magazine, which is from the editor. And then we'll read an article on Turning the Page, a light-filled revival of a 120-year-old Athens, Georgia home, which opens a new chapter for a mother and her three kids. All right? So the front cover of this magazine is in ocean blue tones. The first approximately 40% of from the top is sky blue, and it is a photo of the sky. And that kind of blends into the bottom 60%, which is ocean, and it has a peninsula extending from the left side out to the point of it is almost at the right edge of the front cover. And this is a picture of Duck, North Carolina, a town on the Outer Banks, as you might know. On the peninsula are homes. They appear to be kind of a modified Cape Cods, or they're two-story homes, and they all have pitched roofs and dormer windows, and they are of a coffee color, maybe a dark pink color. It kind of melds with, it's sunset. It appears to be dusk here. Sunset's approaching because the lights are visible in the windows of these homes, and you can just see the land appears to be the color of soil and dark trees in winter. And so the homes are a lighter color to kind of match the soil. The roofs, they're a uniform color. The roofs are all of a charcoal kind of color, all the pitched roofs. And there's a walkway along the peninsula in the front, and the lights of the homes along the coastline are reflecting in the ocean just before the walkway. The walkway extends out to the end, and at the point of this peninsula is a larger structure. It appears to be maybe a country club or a restaurant, and there's a dock there. It seems to be a big restaurant, kind of in the same architectural design of the homes, but much larger and with patios out on the front of the peninsula. The print from top to bottom reads, Southern Living, the South's best. Vacation of the year, restaurant of the year, barbecue joints, cities, classic hotels, cruises, resorts, seafood dives, and more. And then lower on the cover, 50 best beach towns. The strange delight of Pear Island, and that's P-E-A-R, excuse me, it's the strange delight of Pear Salad, Pear Salad, and Aaron and Ben Napier's gorgeous greenhouse, and The Only Way to Make Fried Chicken by Rick Bragg. And on the very bottom, it says April 2025 and Duck, North Carolina. And we'll begin, as we do with every issue, since every issue begins with a piece from the editor, and it is entitled Life at SL. SL as in Southern Living. And it begins with a quote from Rebecca Wells that says, when I'm reading, wherever I am, I'm always somewhere else. And this, the essay is called A Surprise Guest. Sometimes a little bit of history can go a long way. And it starts with a photo of that takes place in an art museum. There are some paintings in the background. One seems to be of an industrial landscape. One seems to be of a female child and one of a male child. You can't see them too clearly. It's in the corner of a museum. And in the foreground, there are a man and a woman standing beside a bicycle that is adorned with plants in its basket, around its seat, and around the rear of the bicycle, flowers, mostly sunflowers and some Gerbera daisies. And the caption of the photo is Sid with Joanne Magnus Fusco at the Dixon Gallery and Gardens, along with her iconic red bike. And the Sid referred to is, of course, Sid Evans, the editor-in-chief, who writes this essay each month. And so we start. A couple of years ago, I was invited to speak to the Memphis Garden Club at the Dixon Gallery and Gardens, one of the crown jewels of my hometown. I mentioned to my host, Pam Martin, that I'm not a very talented gardener, despite years of trying. I have struck out again and again with heirloom tomatoes. But she assured me the members were much more interested in what's happening at Southern Living. They wanted to hear about things like our history and our future, how we come up with story ideas, and whether the grumpy gardener is really that grumpy. And in parentheses, it says, he is. When I was thinking about what to say, I realized I might be able to invite a special guest. As many of you know, the cover of our first issue in 1966 was photographed at a home in Mobile, Alabama, with two little girls pedaling a red tandem bicycle through a yard full of azaleas. One of those girls, Joanne Magnus Fusco, now lives in Memphis, and she, amazingly, still has the bike. Despite some correspondence leading up to the magazine's 50th anniversary in 2016, I had never met Joanne, though I felt like I knew her. When I reached out and asked if she'd like to bring it to the talk, she was delighted and even got a local florist to dress it up a bit. Not surprisingly, Joanne and the bike were the stars of the show. After the talk was over, I was able to meet Dale Skaggs, who has been the director of horticulture at the Dixon since 2007. He told me about the extraordinary tulip program they've developed, planting more than 250,000 bulbs every spring. For the whole story, turn to Cameron Beal's Blooming in Concert on page 13. I had grown up hearing about this place, which was founded in 1976 after Hugo Dixon and his wife, Margaret, left their 17-acre estate to the city to become a public art museum and garden. I'd been to events and wedding receptions here, but I hadn't really thought about how lucky Memphis was to have a gem like the Dixon in the heart of town, and people like Dale to take care of it. As we were leaving, I asked Joanne if she had any plans for the famous family heirloom, and she wasn't sure. She said that she'd kept it not only because of the Southern Living connection, but also because it had been a gift from her father to her mother, who had somehow never learned to ride. Wherever it is, I like knowing that a small piece of our history is still in good hands, and I'm grateful to Joanne for taking care of it. I doubt my friends at the Memphis Garden Club remember much of what I said about the magazine that day, but no one will forget the magical bike that was rolled into the Dixon. Signed, Sid Evans, editor-in-chief, and he can be reached at Sid, S as in Sam, I, D as in David, @southernliving.com. And in the right-hand column of this page, listeners, is a small article that begins with a photo of a woman and a man who are both in kind of in profile looking to our right, and they're dressed in cowboy or cowgirl and cowboy garb. And they are African American, and the man is wearing red glasses. And they have a, their expressions are between serious and smiling. They're not serious and they're not smiling, but they're hinting at both. All right, and the little article is, a new season of biscuits and jam. Like music and food, you'll love this podcast. On Tuesday, March 4, we launched the sixth season of Biscuits and Jam, our interview-style podcast about food, music, and Southern culture. The first episode features the Warren Treaty, the dynamic husband and wife duo of Michael and Tanya Trotter, shown above in that photo. So that's who they are. And they are known for their powerful vocals and inspiring stories. Upcoming episodes will have comedian Roy Wood Jr., country star Riley Green, and social media sensation Landon Bryant. To listen, you can search for Biscuits and Jam wherever you get your podcast. And now, on to Turning the Page, a light-filled revival of a 120-year-old Athens, Georgia home, opens a new chapter for a mother and her three kids. And this is by Caitlin Yarborough-Sadek, with photographs by Robert Peterson and styling by Francis Bailey. It opens with a two-page photo of a living room. Let's read the caption of the photo, which will tell us exactly what it is. Live large in tiny rooms. A bit of magic turned a petite extra space into a snug sitting area attached to the primary bedroom. This included boarding up the previous entrance to the room, which had opened into a stairway hall. Now, it's a personal library featuring plenty of built-in shelving splashed in Barrow & Ball's Stiff Key Blue, number 281. And that, listeners, is a dark blue. I would say a dark ocean blue, since ocean is our theme in this magazine. It is a dark ocean blue. Not quite navy blue. It's not navy blue, but it's, and it's not colonial blue, but it's a dark, an ocean blue. And there, this sitting room has a window in the center with three vertical panes that seem to be looking out onto a field. It's blurred. It could be a field or an ocean. And on either side of the window are 7 shelves, bookcases consisting of 7 shelves, and the frames of the bookcases in the window all match in that same color blue. And also in the center beneath the window, there are 2 abstract prints framed in gold, and on either side of those are some gold lamps that swing from the wall. They're adhered to the wall, and they swing, and they have small white lampshades. And there's a sofa, kind of a love seat sized sofa. It's a gray blue. And it has 2 cushions upon it that are powder blue with a some scattered leaves of a darker, that ocean blue on them. And those cushions match the chair, one of the chairs to the left side, that has that same print, that light blue with the darker blue leaves and mahogany legs. And on the other side is a big kind of a wing chair, and that's beige with the navy blue and white cushion upon it, and a round table beside that chair that's also white. It's a round table, but it has a little drawer in the middle of it, a drawer that you could with a pull on it. And it's got a wooden flower box, a square wooden sculpted flower box that I can't quite tell. Small shrubs, it looks to be like maybe small desert succulents there. And three books on the table. They are red, green, and white on the top. And the largest is on the bottom, and they go smaller as they go to the top. And then there's also a curtain here on the right, just a drape from floor, ceiling to floor. And it's of gray-blue, and it has fringes, a fringe all along the edge, from top to bottom, of gray and blue fringes. There's also in front of the love seat is a small wooden sofa table. It's like a light wooden color. Yeah, kind of like a color of coffee. And there are two sculptures on it and a plant. Big leafy plant. And three books on it. And these two are consecutively smaller. The one on the bottom says Botanica. It's a reddish pink. Then there's a gray one that says H-I-R-S-T along the spine. And then the top one is purple, and it says Wonderland along the spine. And then there's something else that appears to be maybe a tiny chessboard, but I'm not sure, listeners. It's some kind of a tiny little game or something in square that's atop those books. Also draped on the sofa table is a dark blue throw blanket. And so we begin. When Kim Nolan decided to take on a complete renovation of a 120-year-old home in Athens, Georgia, she had a fresh start in mind. On the heels of a divorce, she desired a welcoming place for herself and her three children, Mary Abbott, now 14, Caroline, 12, and Tripp, 10, to begin a new phase. And the house was ready for its own sequel. It felt like exactly what we needed, she said. For Noland, a Texas native who has lived in Athens for more than 17 years, staying close to her current neighborhood was of paramount importance. My kids have so many friends who live nearby, and they love to walk to the bakery and chocolate shop, she says. It's just a great place to grow up. The craftsman-style home was one of the first to be built along a historic street in the Five Points area, just blocks from the University of Georgia's campus and the scenic row of sorority and fraternity houses on Millage Avenue. It instantly grabbed Nolan's interest, as she had been looking for something to preserve, quote-unquote. She tapped Tammy Ramsey of the interior design firm Cloth and Kind, who had worked with her on previous projects, to team up again for this undertaking. The renovation took roughly 7 months from start to finish, and the end result is an old meets new haven that is oriented for the whole family. I wanted somewhere that the dogs could get up on the sofa and my kids could do their crafts at the dining table, says Noland. It's very cozy and calm. It was quite a departure from her previous home, which leaned more toward masculine colors and formal materials, like dark wood, says Ramsey. We wanted to go for a brighter, more light-filled look that reflected her own style and interests, free of any compromise. That perspective extended from the interiors to the layout. Tweaking the existing flow, as well as rewriting some elements from a no-love-lost 1960s add-on, required approval from the local Historic Preservation Commission. We didn't end up changing anything drastically as far as the original blueprint or size, notes Ramsey. And listeners, there's some photos we passed over here as I turn the page. One is of a dining room, and it has a grayish blue table and wooden chairs. And the seats are that light blue cushion, ocean blue cushion, light ocean blue. The dining room has a is gray wainscoting from the like the lower 30% or so of it, and the rest is a wallpaper that we'll describe in the caption. The dining room peeks into some blue shelves that match the blue of that cushion, that ocean blue, kind of a sidebar there. There's a sidebar with some cabinets, and the cabinetry above the sidebar are glass-paned doors to the cabinets. And here's the caption. Have fun in formal places. Sky-hued savanna grass cloth wallpaper by Theron and matching curtains create a jewel box effect in the dining room, which peeks into the kitchen. We had fun here with color and pieces that aligned with her personal style, notes Ramsey. Antique Swedish chairs sourced from Holland McRae in Atlanta. Holland McRae, that is. M-A-C, capital R-A-E. And they surround a French-style dining table. And listeners, upon the dining table is a vase with some tall, maybe gladiola. They're not gladiola, but that's the shape that they are. They're tall spears of white flowers and some greenery surrounding them. And there's a small bowl of fruit, pears, in fact, on the table. And there are two silver candlesticks with light blue candles in them. And the chandelier is interesting because it's just straight, hanging from two gold chains, and it's gold, very angular, straight, has just four lamps, really, gold sticks with white lampshades upon it. And it's a straight row, not round. And the carpet is gray with blue prints, some abstract prints there. On the next page, we have the kitchen, which I think I will read the captions, which will tell you more about it than my description, I think. In the kitchen, it says, invite the light in, losing a side wall in the kitchen almost doubled its size, allowing much more wiggle room in the revamped space. Installing additional windows flooded the area with more sun and created an opportunity for a truly lived-in kitchen. We'll eat at the island on busy school nights, and we can all fit, says Noland. Ramsey sourced pendant lighting via shades from the midnight sun in a custom blue and white pattern by Farron. So those two things are hanging. Those shades, that lighting is hanging from the ceiling on gold chains, and they are, in fact, long, cylindrical, long shades that are, of course, of that blue and white. They seem to be textured. It looks as though it would feel a little rough if you put your hand over it. And in the kitchen, there's, of course, the island that they discussed with three wooden chairs and those light blue cushions again, but this time they're tied onto the posts of the chairs. The island has white marble countertops, just as the counters around the kitchen do. It is a very open kind of feeling. There's an abstract rug on the floor that is of coffee-colored and dark blue. There's a cutting board on the counter, as well as a vase of long, something like beech grass, but it's not feathery, some feathery, long feathery plants here, stems here. And also a small bowl of fruit that I can't quite discern. And there's the stove kitchen. That's everything is white marble and white cabinetry, except for some coffee-colored cabinetry on the left side. The windows have vertical bars on them, and they seem to be looking out onto a lot of greenery. And there's a big greenery plant. Looks like giant spinach. It's not. It's just lots of green, thick, green leafy plant in a white vase on one of the counters, plus some fruit on a pedestal plate on the counter. And then there's a lime green casserole pot on the stove. And then there's a couple of shelves, and they have some lime green porcelain plates, decorative plates, hanging there. And there's a close-up of that sidebar bar that we saw before. And it is a blue with these lime green framed porcelain plates and glasses. And on the sidebar is also a vase of some coffee-colored daisies, looks like, and a platter of fruit of apples, and a silver teapot. And the caption is, "Get creative with cabinetry." Inspired by the vertically paned windows in the kitchen, Ramsey called on Georgia-based custom woodworker Pat Quinn, who used an old door to build a playful hutch coated in Benjamin Moore's Bella Blue 720 to showcase Nolan's collections of china, crystal, and silver, with extra counter space below for entertaining. All right, and on the right, there is a photo of a bed with a green cushioned headboard. The lamps on either side of the bed on some night tables are white porcelain with lavender lampshades, pleated lampshades. The bedspread is white, and the cushions, there are three pillows that look more like cushions that have vertical scattered light blue and white stripes. And there's a bolster before those cushions, which has more of a traditional looking, looks like it's embroidery, a print that would be embroidery, of light green and dark blue with a white background. The caption of this photo, and there are several pictures above, which we'll read about in the caption now. Maximize wall space. A smaller downstairs bedroom was converted into a spacious primary wing with an attached bath and closet. Oh my goodness, have we run out of time already? Yeah, I think we've run out of time for this episode. We'll continue this story next week. So I hope you've enjoyed this, and I hope you'll join us next week. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once more, that's 919-832-5138. So long until next time.